talk, the opinions, the panel.
Welcome into the panel from Sky Sports, Ross Carl. How are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you. And from stuff.co.nz, David Long. G'day, David. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks, Ricardo. Hi there, Ross.
All right, boys. Morning. Let's get into it. We also big presser from New Zealand Rugby this morning announcing Dame Patsy Reddy becoming the first female chair of New Zealand Rugby. Here's one of the things that she said about what she sees her role is and what her work-ons want to be.
You know, we saw a whole different approach to rugby this year, didn't we, through the Rugby World Cup, particularly with our Black Ferns. And I think allowing fans to get to know the players a bit more, to engage in participating at some level, watching the rugby, of course, and respecting the rugby, but seeing it more as something that they can participate in, whether it's through, you know, now that we've got our commercial partnership up and running, whether it's through expanding our digital content and access to the game and the high performance part of it. But it's also going into the communities, you know, bringing back the love of the game at the community level, the heartland rugby, seeing schoolboys and schoolgirls excited about playing rugby. And in particular, and you mentioned the women and girls, I think we've got to be really focusing on transitioning girls into the game, because it's, you know, it's for girls particularly who haven't played contact sports, we've got to make sure they do it properly, safely and securely, and with a good welcoming environment around them.
So that was what she said in terms of work-ons for her and things that she wants to tackle off the top, Ross. What did you make of that as an initial statement, and what do you make of the appointment?
Well, it's a nice direction, isn't it? Really is a nice direction, because one of the things that rugby really needs to find is a connection with the fans. It needs to stay relevant in a market where there is so much choice. And we did see during the World Cup how you can connect with a casual fan, how the Black Ferns did a really good job of connecting with a casual fan. The thing for me, Ricardo, above all else, is you need the high-performance teams to be on board with this, especially within the men's game. You need the coaches, you need the trainers, you need all of the high-performance managers to be on board with this concept. Because in the end, you can have a lot of great ideas, but if they're not on board, when a coach says, no, we lost on the weekend and we're not doing that, that's the final word. The PR people, the marketing people, those people, they don't have a say. When the coach says no, it's no. And that's where the power balance is. So they need to make sure that for all of those things that she says, for all of the wonderful ideas that the marketing teams and the PR teams have, the coaches understand the relevance of selling rugby as much as winning rugby.
Yeah, that's a really good point, isn't it, David? And especially selling it to a new crowd, because we did see a very new crowd, a very different crowd at those Black Ferns games, at the World Cup games, than you would normally have seen, say, at an All Blacks game.
Yeah, that's right. I think some interesting points from Ross there as well. It's about keeping that momentum of what happened at the Women's World Cup. You know, Do they keep that going? Do they manage to keep the profile the Black Ferns have got now, or is it going to sort of fade away? And I think that's going to be the big challenge, really. I mean, it's just surprising that Stuart Mitchell has gone so soon after just over 18 months in the job. He barely sort of got his feet under the table, really, before leaving. But I guess it's a good sort of time for Patsy to come into the job, considering that the Silver Lake deal's done, the Women's World Cup is over, the arrangements with Super Rugby's future is sorted out as well. So it does sort of give her time to get into that role without any sort of the big sort of, you know, urgent decisions to sort of get into stuck into straight away. And obviously Ian Foster's future as well is also secure now to the World Cup. So it's probably timing-wise, it's good for her to come in when she does and, give her sort of a time to sort of find her feet, really.
Now, a lot has been made about how New Zealand Rugby's governance hasn't lined up with high-performance sport New Zealand in terms of the number of women on the board. In fact, of all the major sports codes in New Zealand, they were the only ones not to meet the criteria, Ross. The cynical part of me just says that's what this is about. What about you?
Well, I mean, you can be cynical, but in the end, you've got to make the movement and they've made it, right?
Yep.
In the end, they've done it. So, you know, congratulations to them. Farah Palmer and Bailey Mackey as deputy chairs. I think a few people were surprised that Bailey didn't get the chairmanship when Stuart Mitchell did. So, yeah, look, I think that they're moving in the right direction there. And, you know, it's a step-by-step thing. And they're heading in the right direction with a maybe a better worldview, a little less of a boys' club, a little less of a, you know, conservative, this is the way we approach it in the past, we'll continue to approach it that way approach, which is, you know, NZR's modus operandi for years. So, you know, good on them, I say, for going in this direction.
Yeah. David, what was your take on that? I mean, was that something that occurred to you when you saw the story?
Yeah, I sort of agree with Ross, really. You know, it's easy to be cynical and say, you know, they're just doing it, it's a tokenistic move. But, you know, you've got to sort of... That's quite a sort of insulting, but you know it's sort of degrading what she can bring to the role. Really, you know, she's, you know, you look at her background and what she's achieved. It's a, you know, incredible record of what she's done. And you know, then I guess one thing is that, you know, the rugby knowledge. You know, for bringing people, you know, how many people outside the game you bring into what sort of rugby expertise they've got is something that I guess was needs to be looked at. But, you know, I don't have any issues with it or think it's just all tokenistic, really.
So. Well, you speak of having respect in the game and, you know, sort of having experience. There's a bloke floating around at the moment who's got plenty of both, and that is Eddie Jones. Ross, where to next for Eddie? I mean, is that something you think the Australian Rugby Union will look at, whether it's to replace Dave Rennie or to be some sort of consultant?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously has lots of opportunities coming his way and he's jumped from job to job. Eddie, Ricardo, I'm sure that you can relate to this, reminds me of Jose Mourinho. Yeah. He goes in, he makes a big change and then the whole place blows up, you know, within a few years of it happening. You know, he's not a long-term option in that way. A genius for a short period of time, but, you know, his approach is somewhat combative and appears to have cultural issues after a long period of time. I would be surprised if Australian rugby put him into a role. It's hard to know, director of rugby, those kind of roles. It's hard to understand technical directors, what they actually mean. Are they, in the case of Rusty Erasmus, actually the coach? Or, you know, are they a person who oversees the greater good? I wouldn't want him to interfere with Dave Rennie. Let Dave Rennie do his thing. But he's obviously got a lot of know-how. Is he the kind of guy who is going to unify a union? Is he the kind of guy who's going to oversee how something should go? Maybe not. Maybe he's more of a hired gun. You know, maybe he'll go back to a really high-paying club coaching role. I just wonder whether he's the right guy to take Australian rugby into the future.
Yeah. I actually saw somebody, an English journalist, float an idea, David, which... For me, he's, as soon as he said, I went, that is so up Eddie Jones's alley. I don't think it matters how much money's on the table. And that is that Michael Checker's given him a call. He'll be a consultant for Argentina at the Rugby World Cup, who are in the same pool as England. I mean, that'd be classic Eddie Jones, wouldn't it?
It would be. Well, I mean, don't forget, you know, he's helped South Africa. Didn't he help them win the World Cup previously as well? You know, he's got expertise in that. And he came, you know, within a whisker of winning the World Cup for Australia in 2003, so he certainly knows his way around World Cup. And if I was, as far as I'd be Australia, I'd be fighting, but I'd be desperate to get Eddie Jones to work with Dave Rennie. I mean, Dave Rennie, he's hardly sort of, you know, covered himself in glory this year for the Wallabies. They had some terrible losses, losing to Italy. They should have lost that test against Wales recently. They need some help, and I think he could be the person to give that to him. You know, and I don't think you think, well, Dave already won it. I think Ross would remember him better than me, but I seem to remember that when Dave started off at the Chiefs, Wayne Smith sort of came in there and as a sort of above him or assistant coach and sort of helped him out in that. So I don't think Dave is the sort of person that has the ego that sort of says, you know, I'm the man, I call all the shots. I think it would be a fantastic move for the Wallabies if they did bring Eddie into the World Cup.
Yeah, it'd be an interesting one in terms of how that dynamic would work, but I think it would only improve them. Let's stick with Australia, but switch sports. Cricket. David Warner this morning has pulled out his application to captain Australia again. Of course, he had that captaincy ban, Ross, and then Australian cricket when he said, "Well, look, how about me just captaining in the white ball stuff?" Said, "Well, let's have a public hearing about it," which obviously meant they'd have to go over all the stuff from 2018. And he's thrown his toys now and pulled his application, which makes me think, what doesn't he want us to know?
It's a little silly, isn't it, to play this kind of stuff out in public and to chase your ambitions like that. I mean, mate, if you're not the captain, you're not the captain. Just deal with it. Go out and score some runs. That's my take on this. Like, it's a little silly, isn't it? And if he's got something to hide, you know, okay. But, you know, we all know what happened back then, and we all know that there's some dubious character. But we also know that he can hit a boundary. So, mate, forget about it. Go hit your boundaries.
Yeah, David, where are you on your namesake over the ditch?
It's a confusing one, really. I mean, I was reading the Australian media about it, and they seem quite critical of Cricket Australia, who it seems that they wanted it to get done, that David Warner would be able to lead sides again. And they were quite keen on it being done privately, but this independent review committee they set up wanted it to be public. But it also... David Warner done, or what he got his team to do with the ball against that test against South Africa, was pretty terrible stuff. And I don't really understand how Warner can want to be allowed to captain sides again, but not having to go through what he did. You know, it's like if you appeal for a murder case or something like that, after you've been found guilty the first time, you don't want anyone to report on it when you have your appeal. You know, it's like. You know, he wants it both ways, really, doesn't he? He wants to be able to play again, but he doesn't want to have to be talked about what he did again.
Yeah, exactly, mate. 100%, 100%. Let's stay with you, David, on this one, because this is right up your alley. The British Lawn Tennis Association have been fined $1.5 million New Zealand by the ATP for its Wimbledon ban of Russian and Belarusian players. I don't know if that's a big fine for the British Lawn Tennis Association in terms of what they make every year or not. What was your take on this when you saw it coming? I mean, was it pretty predictable that something like this was going to happen?
I never knew any fine was going to come. They make millions and millions, the LTA from Wimbledon every year, so it's not going to affect them, their bottom line too much. But I think it's pretty petty from the ATP. Their stance when they wouldn't allow players to get ranking points for Wimbledon was petty, and all it did was hurt the players more than hurt Wimbledon, because the tournament carried a long fine. And the issue is, I think, you know, sadly it doesn't look like there's going to be any end to the war in Ukraine anytime soon. And you hear Putin today, he's talking about escalating it. You know, it's going to go on, and where are we going to be at if it's still the same situation more than next year? Will they continue to ban players from Russia, or will they back down? Backing down is going to be, you know, it's going to be a tough situation for the LTA to go and do that after this year's stance. And I don't know, we could be even into a hell of a lot worse situation by we come to next year's Wimbledon, about how it's all dealt with.
It's going to be an interesting one, Ross, on this one. I mean, I kind of look at the broader scope of things and think, you know, the Tories at the moment over there are struggling in the popularity stakes. It might be an easy win for them just to pay this on behalf of and be seen as the heroes here.
Yeah. Surely there has to be an element of a conscience vote that the ATP can understand, that, you know, you're going to have to allow tournaments and players to make a stand on something that is so important. And, you know, for them to come out and hand out a fine is, I think it's petty, because, you know, quite frankly, you know, we all know what's going on, and Wimbledon has made a stance on it, and it is the stance. You know, it's a war that's being, you know, picked on it on a small country, and they made a stance on it, and that's fine. It's their tournament, let them be. You know, and there might be an effect on the rankings, and there might be effect on players' opportunities. It's a tennis tournament for 2 weeks of the year, you know, really. And it might be the tennis tournament, but it's a tennis tournament for 2 weeks of the year. You know, to give them, you know, $1.5 million ban seems like a drop in the ocean for the amount of money that they must make off their tournament and, you know, move on. And if a political party wants to come in and, you know, make some political capital of it, yeah, go ahead. But it seems petty to me from the... from the point of view of the Tennis Association.
Yeah, well, especially when you look at, you know, what other sporting organisations have done, including, you know, the Olympics, who are well known for moving glacially on anything. I mean, they've already done it. And FIFA have done it. UEFA have done it. I mean, it's not like the ATP, sort of British Lawn Tennis Association, are out on their own here and doing this, are they, David?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I guess it's different in terms of the Olympics, where they make them plan this stupid flag and, you know, Russian Olympians or whatever it is. But I think the FIFA issue is certainly, you know, comparable. Whether actually, you know, I've heard interesting stories about whether FIFA actually wanted to go ahead with banning Russia, or whether they were just pressured into it by, was it Poland refused to play against Russia in one of the World Cup playoff games, and that sort of forced them to go and do the ban after that, really. I don't know what the situation or the answer is, really, but, you know, I guess we're going to see more and more Russian sports people or sports, particularly sports teams, continue to be banned around the world. And, you know, so I don't really have a problem with it. I think, you know, we have a point the rest of the world can make that they're not, they don't agree with what's going on in Ukraine, then the better, really.
Yeah, that leads nicely. Well, maybe not nicely is not the right term, but it leads us into FIFA, the World Cup. We're into the quarterfinal stages, Ross. I know that Sky have been going big on this. You had dedicated channel. You had games left, right, and centre. Replays everywhere. I don't know. Goran must have about 3 months' days in lieu based off the back of this tournament, all the hours he's put in, mate. But we're at quarterfinal stage now. Who do you expect is going to be in the semi-finals? We've got England versus France. Whoever wins that plays the winner of Morocco-Portugal, and then the winner of Brazil-Croatia plays the winner of the Dutch and the Argentinians.
Yeah, it's been an amazing World Cup, hasn't it? Like, to make a prediction is actually very, very difficult on any game, because just bizarre things have been happening, haven't they? I would imagine, from the look of Brazil, that you'd be, you know, pretty tough to go against them. Just from a, you know, I suppose a heartfelt point of view, Argentina, yeah, and seeing Messi continue through. I can't. France versus England, maybe France. Morocco versus Portugal, but who knows? Morocco could just get onto D and win on penalties again. Who knows?
Yeah, well, I mean, exactly. That's what they did to Spain. Although the Spanish really, it was funny. I saw one of the Spanish players tweet something about how Morocco didn't turn up to play and all they wanted to do was defend and play on the counter. It's like, in 120 minutes, Spain had two shots. Let's talk about throwing stones in glass houses, David.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Spain have been a terrible disappointment, weren't they, after that the 7-0 win over Costa Rica. I think France must be licking their lips at the moment. I don't think they'd be threatened too much by England, and I think they'll have way too much class for Portugal, who obviously are going to beat, well, not obviously, but you'd think they're going to beat Morocco in the quarterfinals. I think the bottom half of the draw, if you look at it that way, it's definitely France with a straightforward route to the final. And how exciting is it going to be potentially for Brazil against Argentina semi-final, which is looking at that would be, it's going to be fantastic. I mean, you know, you always sort of get people saying, is this the best World Cup ever? And Infantini has already been saying that, but you'd expect that from him anyway. But certainly, I think it's got to be right up there in terms of the World Cup. It's been sort of the right, you want some upset. You don't want too many. You don't want, I would expect, you don't want Costa Rica against Morocco in the World Cup final. But, you know, you want the big guns, but you also want to see some great results and some upsets along the way. And we've had all of that and some fantastic goals. I think it's been a brilliant World Cup, really.
Yeah, Gianni Infantino saying it's the best World Cup ever is like when bands have a new album coming out and they're doing interviews and they're saying, oh, it's our best album yet. Like, it's just the way it rolls, right? It's predictable.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they do every Olympics as well, don't they? That's the greatest one ever.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, gentlemen, thanks very much for your time on the panel today. Go well and enjoy your weekends, eh?
You too.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers. Ross Cale from Sky Sports, David Long from stuff.co.nz with us.